right in the heart of Christmas season right now, and we actually are in the studio with a couple of limited chairs. So everyone's here with us today. We are joined by Sebastian, who is miles away. We also joined by Dylan. Thank you for joining us. And Joshua Mayer, who has attended shows before. Yep. I think last year you were here talking about LGBT representation in anime and manga.
Right.
Check it out online, www.velvetstudio.ca, to hear that show. But today's show, we are really getting into the spirit of the conversation and the spirit of really the season, and talking about reconciling, maybe not reconciling, you know, what does it look like? What is the reality of being openly gay and openly Christian? Now, I mean, there's a lot of Christian hating from the gay community, you know, during the holiday season. In particular, the Salvation Army usually takes quite a beating because of their stance on various LGBT rights. And I think most notably, the Vatican and the Pope decided that he should remind everybody that nothing has changed since 2005 and no gay priests. So he felt compelled to just give us the memo that he's still no on the gay priest front. So it's interesting. How do you navigate? Now, yourself, Joshua, you are from the Philippines and are Catholic. So when the Pope says no gay priests, are you now going to change your mind about taking the cloth? Like, how does that affect you?
Well, I mean, we should probably start by saying that I've never really been interested in priesthood.
Okay. I mean, that was a joke. I'm sorry.
Oh. Right over my head. No, but it's a great question. One, I should preface with the fact that I've never really considered myself to be too religious, and that's partially because of the way I was raised, and you know, partially because the church isn't a very friendly environment for somebody like me. So it's so in getting to the question of, you know, how you reconcile faith and the reality of faith, I think part of that comes from the fact that you don't, at least for me, you don't cling too hard to the things that the people in charge say.
So you maybe, so it's more in keeping with perhaps the letter of the Bible as opposed to the letter of what the Pope has decided the constitution of the day is.
And I mean, even then, you know, the Bible is a pretty fraught resource, I think, for if you really want to get to the heart of, you know, what Catholicism is all about, Christianity is all about, I think it's it can be something that, yeah, it's dangerous to interpret, you know.
Either way, my favorite interpretation of the Bible is, because I think it's just, I mean, first of all, it's really easy, is the Red Letter Bible and Red Letter Christians. Are you familiar with them?
No.
So the Red Letter Bible, and correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe you, one of you two can jump in, is where anything that Jesus said is in red and the rest of it isn't. So if you go, you know, you go into a chapter and you're like, okay, what's the important bits I should read? And I'm, you know, important, you know, euphemistic expression here. Usually the shit that Jesus says is probably what you should pay attention to. And the rest of it is just guidance. The things that Jesus says. My expressions got away with me there, and I apologize for any insult, but what Jesus says is really what should be guiding. And I think it's interesting, what really interests me about the conversation that we're having here with you specifically is, you know, why have you chosen, or was it really a choice to remain Catholic once you came out? Because of all of the denominations of Christianity, they are perhaps, I think, Orthodox Christian, like the Russian Orthodox Church, might be a bit more anti-gay, but the Catholic Church isn't particularly rolling out the rainbow bandwagon.
They're in the news the most.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with the, you know, with the fact that it's not just a religion for me. It's also part of my, you know, family structure. It's part of the identity that, I have as a Filipino. Mm-hmm. Most Filipinos are Catholic. They're raised in their religion. And it might not be the strongest sort of argument to stick in the religion, but it's an enduring one. It's something that it's not so easily gotten rid of.
I think. No, I understand that. I grew up in Britain, which is the Church of England, and which is a dreadfully boring church as a Brit growing up. You know, it's lots of mumbling along the hymns and the Lord's Prayer before every school assembly. They phased that out recently. I think there was that. I think I was maybe the last batch of students to go through that. But you're right. I mean, it does play a very significant role. And in Britain, we're having a conversation of, you know, the Queen is the head of the church, and Britain is mm-hmm. a Christian state by the effect of the Queen being the head of the Church of England, I should say, not the Church of all things, but rather the Church of England. She is the head. And, you know, we need to be cognizant of that. And there's a huge cultural thing. And I think... And actually, Sebastian kind of cried over the airwaves there about media representation and the dialogue around that. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of people in the media kind of, you know, they lump the churchgoers as the naysayers, as the ultra-conservative wing trying to cling to old traditions. But in many ways, you know, growing up, I'm not Christian myself, but growing up in... you know, South Wales and, you know, the Church of England, there's a lot of cultural influences that would be very difficult for me to shake.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand or at least empathize how being, you know, maybe it's not as easy to shake off being Catholic as people might think.
No, that's exactly it. And I think one of the things that you sort of get when you're raised in a country that's mostly Catholic and that has, for me at least, Catholicism as part of its identity is that it becomes it contributes to a feeling of solidarity, I think, and to remove yourself from that would be to, I guess, feel alone, make mm-hmm. yourself feel alone, which is kind of scary.
But I think that kind of is also a good juxtaposition to North American and American kind of independence.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all very, you know, one for, you know, all for yourself. You know, the American dream is about you bettering yourself. Very individualistic is the word I'm looking for. The rugged individual, absolutely. And I think that compares quite starkly to other countries and other cultures in Europe and in Asia, where there's a much more collectivist environment.
Right.
And I think the church... In Britain, which is what I can speak to, has certainly helped to father that sense of collective identity and collective culture. I'm just going to pause for just one second. The other Joshua that we have joining us today is outside, if you'd like to go and welcome him in. So does being in the church help provide you with a sense of belonging and a sense of community? And how does that compare to the sense of community with the gay community?
Oh, right. Well, for me, you know, having grown up in the church and having, you know, very close family members with me who are Catholic and all that, it has provided me with a sense of community. And on the other hand, it's harder for me, really, now that I think about it, to identify with the gay community because I kind of came out pretty late, and and I've always been sort of a bit of a recluse. So it's when you ask the question, I can think of the sort of the answer that might be expected of me, and I find myself giving sort of the opposite mm-hmm. answer. Yeah.
And I get that. I get the sense. I mean, for a lot of folks, the gay community is this kind of elusive thing that only really exists on Grindr and maybe, you know, that one gay bar that might be left in your town. And you don't really want to be there after dark because things happen. Right. And, you know, I get that. And that's such a different environment to the sense of community that gets built in a church. And
right.
That gets built in the community of a church.
And I mean, it doesn't help that in the Philippines, you know, being gay is, I think, slowly becoming more and more accepted, but not really. So, in a sense, you know, finding the gay community in the Philippines is really, really elusive.
Now, before we move on, the other question I have for you is perhaps unique to being a Catholic, where a lot of things which are now more accepting in other denominations, women priests, gay marriage, these things are a solid no in the Catholic Church. Now, you're not a woman, so and you've already told me you're not going to take the cloth, so that question is irrelevant. But let's say you did fall madly in love with somebody and you were looking at getting married. What kind of position does that put you in?
Honestly, a really awkward one. It is something that I've thought about before and something that I have discussed with partners before. And it's, you know, it's really weird because I talk to people about getting married on the beach and something and, you know, the ceremony at sunset. But whenever I mention that in that image, I don't really see who's officiating the ceremony. Mostly because I doubt I'll ever find a Filipino priest to right. No, well, right. You are. But yeah, no. It's a question that I ask myself a lot.
And people tend to say, you know, in that case, you know, why isn't a civil ceremony a good alternative? Is the actual religious ceremony of marriage important?
I think it depends on who you are. At this point, for me, considering that I have already sort of begun to play it fast and loose with the other principles of Catholicism, no, I think I'm willing to let that one go. It would have been nice, but, you know.
Perhaps the reality of it is.
Right.
And I think that might pose some difficulties for folks who maybe are not in a position where they can play fast and loose with...
No.
With the Catholic traditions. You mentioned in the Philippines, having that gay community is elusive, perhaps because they are more, in the Philippines, more thorough in the practicing of Catholicism. Have you spoken to folks who are openly gay in the Philippines? Like, is this something that comes up navigating the religion and the sexuality? Is that something that comes up in conversation?
Not too often, no, because I guess people, you don't really talk about sex in general in the Philippines, and sexuality maybe even less so. But I do remember having a conversation with my uncle, who is openly gay and much more religious than I am. And he was once asked about, you know, how he reconciles the fact that he's openly gay with the fact that he's Catholic. And I think he had roughly the same answer, in that as much as, you know, he would like to adhere strictly to all the rules and all the everything in the literature for Catholics, it's difficult if you're gay, and it also doesn't make much sense because, how do you put it, it would mean that he would have to believe in a God that created him to be unhappy, something like that. So for him, I think it also means, yeah, playing a little bit more fast and loose with.
But that must be quite a challenge to that very fundamental belief.
Right.
You know, because, of course, I think the belief is that God created man in his own image, I think, is the phrase. So how and why, like, that idea of being created in God's image but also being gay and how that's reflected in the Bible, I think that is a very interesting conversation that perhaps we'll get to later in the show. But it's been a very heavy conversation, which is why we're going to try and lighten the mood a little bit with our first Christmas song. Now, it's not gay, and they're not gay, but it's such a gay song. This is Dear Santa, Bring Me a Man This Christmas by the Weather Girls, who you may recognize from their huge hit It's Raining Men, and we'll be back just after this.
trying my best.
Hello and welcome back to... You know, I forgot which way to put headphones on. I was like, I'm looking at them like, how do these work? Oh, you'd... I know, but they have the R and the L on them, which, and I'm always like, oh my gosh, it won't work the other way around, and it really is redundant. Of course it works the other way around. I'm just a second, I've got this going in the background. Now, there's nothing quite as cheerful as the Weather Girls. I think everybody in the room kind of cheered up a little bit once they were on, which is always quite exciting, so... Yeah. Now, Dylan, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
You came all the way from probably just up the road, because you are, I mean, Joshua May is also, you know, lives in Ottawa. But the point being that you are, I assume, Ottawa born and bred?
Yep.
Born and raised, sorry. I don't think you were bred. But that's beside the point. Point being, how does being a Canadian Christian differ? Now, you heard what Joshua was saying earlier. You know, how is it different? You know, does Canada have as strong of a religious culture as maybe the Philippines does, which I haven't got the sense of, but maybe I'm incorrect. Like, so what if you were to highlight the biggest difference, what would you say?
So first, I don't think I'm the best person to answer this question because I'm not too much into the gay community or anything. I actually realized that I was interested in guys when I was in like grade 7 or something, and I wasn't Christian yet. I hadn't been to church, and it wasn't until grade 10 when a friend invited me to church that I really heard the gospel about Jesus for the first time. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years later I became a Christian. Okay. And only a few years after that did I become publicly both to everyone.
Okay.
So I haven't really gotten too into the community, and really, that's a bit of my story as to how I'm different mm-hmm. than Josh and where he's coming more from coming in the church first to really becoming who he is now.
I think that's interesting. So you realized that you were a homosexual, and at that point, grade 10, like how young is that? I'm dreadful at ages.
16 years old.
Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I was like, is that like 11 years old? Like how does that work? I'm dreadful at these things. So that makes sense. And I think it's encouraging that you found the church at a young age. That's not... I never got the sense that was particularly common to find faith that young.
It may something to do with the church that I'm from.
Okay.
The church that I ended up going to, they're a very evangelical church. They really encourage their members to share the gospel with other people, invite their friends to hear it, invite people to the church, and to be someone who is sharing the message and being mm-hmm. vocal, but also being very, what's the word I'm looking for? Both bold while also being gentle and willing to listen and talk and have discussion.
Oh, for sure. So rather than, you know, telling you it's this way or the highway, it's this way if you would be so interested.
Yeah.
Yeah. It immediately made me think of like Avon, where people like encourage their friends to participate, but I realized that the church is a dreadful comparison to the Avon's a dreadful comparison to make to the church, and I should think before I make these comparisons audibly.
Except
for the Church of England, yes. Yeah, there's not too much difference there. Yeah. Input from the back seats there, I think. So I think that's interesting. So what is difference between the Evangelical Free Church of
Canada,
I will remember this, and the Catholic Church? Like, what's the big difference between the two?
So, I don't know the history of the Evangelical Free Church of Canada very well. It had something to do with somewhere in Europe and something, I don't know exactly. But definitely, it's very different than the Catholic Church in that, as far as I understand, it's not you have to listen to all these rules or you can't be part of the Catholic Church. It's more about bringing churches together even if they disagree on the smaller things, mm-hmm. so long as they agree on the central things. Their like motto is unity in Christ and mm-hmm. charity in the other things. So like there are some churches in Canada in the E-Free Church that do have female pastors and things like that, whereas other churches are free to say, no, we don't want to do that. We will still love you, but we are not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that, like infant baptism, various things. We can agree on Jesus and the good news,
even if we disagree on littler things.
Mm-hmm. And I think that just, I think that boils down to how you action. We mentioned earlier the red letter Bibles. It depends on how you interpret, how strictly you interpret the metaphor that surrounds all of that. The Bible's quite a big read, by the way, folks. If you have a few weekends free, make your way through it. It's interesting. Actually, we had a friend, you know, remember Heather? Of course you know Heather. She was laid up injured, so she read Genesis. And every now and then she Facebooked different quotes out of Genesis. And out of context, some quotes in Genesis are hilarious. And she said it was one of the most interesting things she's read in a long time. And I realized Genesis is the Old Testament. Not much Jesus happening in the Old Testament.
Not too much.
But the... Just laughing at me back there. But no, the idea being that it's worth reading. So that's really interesting. Where does the Evangelical Church of Canada, Free Church of Canada, sit in terms of the gay marriage debate?
I'm not entirely sure, actually.
Does it kind of depend on the church and where you are and so on?
I would assume so.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
Now, you mentioned earlier you're not particularly in the gay community.
Correct.
How is that, just because the gay community hasn't been receptive? You haven't really been to events? Or is it because, like, what's kind of some of the reasons behind that?
I think a lot of it is my convictions on what the Bible says about gay marriage and stuff. And I'm not entirely 100% sure exactly what I think. But as you were saying, there is this tension between the two communities.
Absolutely.
And I'm kind of in the middle. And kind of anything I says makes at least some people annoyed.
So what would one of those things be?
Like, when I did come out, so to say, I posted a video of my testimony of, like, how I became a Christian and my struggles with same-sex attraction and stuff publicly on Facebook. And so... a lot of people were very positive and receptive and very encouraging, especially from the church. And because of that, I didn't hear anything from another point of the argument, I guess. Because once 10 or 20 people post positively on a thing, you don't want to be the guy posting negatively.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Later on, I heard from one of my friends from high school who, at that point, told me he was gay, that he was very upset and very saddened by that story that so many people said they were so encouraged by. He was saying how much there was, like, self-hate in it, whereas everyone else was very encouraging and supportive and there for me. And so what I thought was good then felt terrible. And so
soured almost.
Very,
yeah.
Very confusing.
That's very, I mean, I think that really boils down to it. I mean, it's been, what, 2,000 years? Opinions may have differed slightly over the last 2,000 years on exactly how the scripture should be read. We did a great interview with... the Universalist Muslims, and we were talking about the interpretations of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and which is where I think a lot of Islam draws its issues with homosexuality, is actually out of that story, which Old Testament, not much Jesus, just to keep
just
everybody on the same page. And I think a lot of that boiled down to, you know, whether or not you interpret it literally or figuratively. And we talked, there was an imam, I believe, in Toronto, who is really saying that in that case, it's kind of, it's more of a figurative expression. So that was really interesting. Check it out on our website. Google search for Universalist Muslims on our website, www.velvetstudio.ca. Great, interesting conversation about Islam and sexuality. Just a plug to a previous episode there that I was going to get to. Now, you mentioned something earlier that piqued my interest as well. So the other gentleman who had the kind of more negative perspective and was gay, was he also Christian? Is that...
his parents had come from a Catholic background, and so he definitely struggled with that tension in his own family life. I don't know if he's told his parents yet, so he's still kind of in this tension.
Kind of exploring that, and it must be quite a difficult environment to kind of be exploring, for sure.
And he's definitely struggling with the whole idea of how a lot of the church makes itself to look like it's so much better than other people, but then in his own family life he sees the difficulties in his parents' marriage, and how can they hold him to a higher standard and look down when they're also not perfect and broken.
What's the phrase? Ye without sin shall cast the first stone, I think. I'm amazed at my general knowledge of well, general right, bad knowledge. Yes, absolutely. So the
string attached to your face.
Yeah, the strings are low. I don't know where there's like strings, like something's molting on me. Gosh, Dan, it's Sebastian. You threw me off what I was saying.
Keep going.
It's gonna bug me now.
Don't move.
He who is without sin, throw the first
stone. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that, everybody listening. There were things stuck to my head that Sebastian had to take care of, which apparently is a thing that happens on this show. He's just jealous that he doesn't have a mic and can't join in the conversation. Ah, well, snooze you lose. That's what I say. So, yeah, I think that's really interesting. Now, when you came out, is your family Christian?
They're not Christian per se. My mom came from a Presbyterian background, kind of, but not her parents. And my dad was like an altar boy, youngest of like 10 children in a Catholic family.
Okay.
But when they became a family and I became part of the family, our family wasn't really Christian or anything. Mm-hmm. The only year that I claimed any religious influence was when there was no junior kindergarten in Ottawa. And so to get into the Catholic school board, I had to claim my half Catholic background to get 1 year.
That reminds me of my mother, who had to convince the Catholic school board that my sister was Catholic, even though she's a pagan. I'm a pagan. I think my grandmother was like maybe Church of England if the census made her write something down. Like, I think we have 5,000 Jedi in Britain, but most people just put down Church of England, although they probably haven't seen the inside of a church since that wedding they went to in the 50s. There's a lot of that, a lot of like laissez-faire Christians in Britain. And I think that might be a bit of a culture that happens here. And I think it's interesting that we are seeing there are some really fascinating parallels between the gay community and the struggle for the gay community to create a sense of community building, with a lot of people being isolated, a lot of people feeling lonely, a lot of people resorting just to Grindr and random anonymized hookups. There are some services such as in Ottawa, Kind, which was formerly Pink Triangle Services, and there are other service centres across Canada where that community building happens within the gay context. And I think that maybe is something where the gay community could actually learn a few lessons from the church and from Christian groups. Now, for you, I know that your church has moved. And they bought a new property, but it wasn't. And they're building on it, and it's exciting, and there's lots going on. How important is it to have that sense of community with the church and with the congregation?
I think it's very important. I think that was one of the main things that made me want to go to church in the first part, is that I really didn't have any community, and they were willing to accept me as I was, even if they didn't know the whole story at that point. And even after I came out, they were still all very encouraging, very supportive, very accepting. There were definitely some parents who were asking questions like, what does this mean? He's serving in children ministry. What does this mean? But my pastor was very, very nice and made sure to answer any of their questions and put all worries aside. And so I've been very thankful for the community and support and encouragement that I've received.
Sure. So you weren't in the children ministry trying to recruit more to the homosexual lifestyle and... We have an agenda, you know, and it's glitter-backed hard pages, hardback with glitter, sorry, and it's a fabulous document. Anyway, thought Sebastian was going to pipe up there, but he didn't. That's fine.
I lost mine years ago.
Well, your copy of the gay agenda?
Yeah.
Yeah. I lent mine to Lance Bass. He never gave him back.
I still find the glitter everywhere, though. You never get rid of it.
I think the glitter comes with gay diarrhea, but that's a totally different topic. Anyway, moving on. Now, is what I find interesting is maybe where you said that, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect between you and the gay community in Ottawa. And we've been here in the Ottawa, we've been doing the show for about 5 years, and there is a gay community here in Ottawa, but it's very much focused around, you know, going to the bar. Or it's focused around events that, like by the Ottawa Knights, or usually at CPs there are kink-related events. Are these kinds of spaces where you would feel particularly welcomed as a Christian gay man?
Now, I don't think being Christian means you can't drink alcohol. Although, personally, I don't really drink alcohol. for various reasons. And yeah, I personally don't think I'd feel very comfortable in those spaces. So sure. No.
And do you think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think there is or is not an anti-Christian sentiment in the gay community?
To some extent, I think there definitely is. Like, a unwillingness to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, various things that I'll like on Facebook that I think are fully acceptable that anyone who actually reads the whole thing would be happy about. I try to avoid liking anything that is definitely hateful in any way, and I would not like those things anyways. But then that friend again, he would send me a Facebook message saying, you've liked all these hateful things, and I'm like, what? These are all things that show how Jesus loves you even if this, that, or another thing, how even if those are things you struggle with, he still died on the cross for you. Like, things that I think would be loving and that people should hear, regardless of what their, like, belief is or what they would then agree or disagree with. This is a discussion I want to have, not one that I just want to continue to keep everyone divided into boxes and bubbles. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think there's a bit of a unwillingness to listen.
So maybe one of the big lessons that we can learn here is having that communication, having that dialogue, and being able to have that dialogue with an open mind. I know that I can think of many instances in the gay community where perhaps being more open-minded like that would be a much better approach. Now, we have another Christmas song, and this one isn't more Weather Girls. I am very sorry if you were looking forward to a Weather Girl medley today. Sadly, it's not going to happen, but maybe next time. This is Mary Did You Know by Pentatonix. Now, the two gay members of Pentatonix actually have a YouTube band group thing. I think they're called like the Super Fruits or something like that, which is hilarious. They had the song out a couple of weeks ago. I think we actually featured the song on our show a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, this is Mary Did You Know, and we'll be back just after this.
Did you know that your baby boy is heaven's perfect?
we are talking today about Christianity. And I think if anything has become clear over today's conversation is actually how very little I actually know about Christianity. It's been like more like an episode of let's explore how badly Luke can remember that one time he studied RE in Britain 10 years ago and harken back to that. So yeah, I apologize to anyone who has any shred of religious knowledge and has had to endure with this conversation. But we will move bravely forward, and I am joined by the other Joshua. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
And we know each other through a mutual friend who actually converted, mm-hmm. and I never actually thought to invite him. So more fool me.
One degree of separation.
Absolutely, yeah. Small world. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that really has become apparent. I didn't realize that I knew so many gay people who were Christian, but I think that might just be part of the conversation that we're having today, where maybe because in the gay community it's not really something that you flash about that you're Christian, and vice versa. Is it something that you pop into conversation when you're doing a particularly like at the Easter Mass? Like, is it just something that comes
up?
Yeah,
I think that is the same as just being out in public and screaming I'm gay. Like, it's pretty similar. In the gay community, you're not screaming I'm Christian. It's just awkward.
Yeah. Except for I mean, the exception being Pride, then you generally do scream you're gay. That's true.
Yeah, there's that.
At least my outfit does. So either way kind of goes. Now, we were talking earlier about, the community and whether or not the gay community is accepting or welcoming enough of Christianity. And I think there have been some examples of justifiably why the gay community, and I say community, there's a lot of us, and we're not actually, we don't meet on Thursdays to write the agenda. It's not that organized. We are a disorganized community, unlike the church, which is actually quite organized, very well put together. I think they do have agendas, like actual physical ones, but I digress. As I was saying, we are talking about whether or not the gay community is welcoming and how we can go about that. Now, you mentioned to me earlier, before the show kicked off, actually doing one of the I think it was during the Weather Girls, because who can forget the Weather Girls? But you mentioned that you actually worked at PTS, which is now PTS, standing for Pink Triangle Services, for folks who maybe don't know. And they are a LGBT service providing organization based out of Ottawa. Mm. Now, you mentioned a really interesting story where yourself and another member of, I think it was another volunteer.
Mm-hmm. We were both coordinators.
Coordinators wanted to actually talk about Christianity with the larger group. Can you tell us a bit about what happened?
As coordinators for the group, we have to schedule like events and activities. And it just became apparent to me and the other person, the other coordinator, that our religious beliefs weren't really accepted. And we never felt really all that comfortable to talk about. It wasn't even really something that we went to, except for within our own personal space. So we heard some of the young kids in the youth group just making comments, anti-religious comments. And it was funny. Everybody laughed. I even wanted to laugh. The jokes were funny. But I realized that it was a normative belief within the gay community. And even though these young kids may not be reflective of the whole community, I noticed that they will be the next generation that are going to grow up. And from the other people that I know, I truly believe it is reflective, because there is a huge gap between the church and the gay community. And I went to the coordinator and I just brought it up. Just, can we talk about religious beliefs? There are, like, this should be a safe space for young gay youth or LGBT youth that want to express their religious beliefs. And it just never really occurred to the ED, the executive director at the time, not because she wasn't competent, just because it's a huge problem within the gay community that we just don't really think about it. We don't try to build those gaps because they're comfortable gaps, that we want to keep a space between the two, because it seems like we're always attacking each other. And to keep the gap is to stay silent, and to stay silent, there's no fighting. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when these youth are committing suicide and there's issues like that, you know, and then you're like, okay, is this comfortable gap
something that I want to keep, or is it something that I want to try to build a gap so we're actually able to have a conversation?
And we mentioned earlier in the conversation with Dylan about how important the sense of community within the Christian church is, and perhaps we can help tackle those incredibly very depressing rates of teen of suicides. Now, it reminds, something you've said reminded me of the Bishop of Wales, and it made huge headlines. And he said, the reason everyone believes that the church is homophobic is because it does homophobic things. And I think he called a spade, and everyone just lost their marbles that he was actually recognizing that the church makes decisions and kind of makes or is caught in the media doing things that aren't very particularly conducive to the gay community. So how do you bridge that gap? Because of course youth see this, they take on that media, they see Malta just passed laws to outlaw conversion therapy, and then everyone starts talking about conversion therapy and thinking of like shock therapy, and immediately people go, oh my gosh, that's dreadful, how could that be a Christian thing? But of course these are extremes. I don't think anyone does shock therapy this side of the Atlantic.
Well, this side of the North American border, actually. Reparative therapy was a big thing in the States and grew into a huge organization called Exodus that was ran by a man named Michael Bussey, who I'm actually friends with on Facebook. And after years of running this organization with another man, he actually fell in love with the other man that he ran the organization with. And today he fights reparative therapy. That organization today actually has closed down, renamed itself, probably still does it in the dark corners, but Alan Chambers, the guy that runs or ran Exodus, made a public apology with the main leaders of Exodus, who are accepting of their sexuality now, and made a public apology to them saying, we do not believe that reparative therapy works after years of trying. That is on the south side of the North American border. But in Canada, like I was saying, that comfortable gap that we like, that we stay in each other, in our own respective communities, like I said, is becoming a problem because of teen suicide or just the problems within family dynamics where kids are being kicked out or just not even being able to talk with your parent, you know, like myself with my own family. Like I see my siblings raising their kids and I think like in my family, I won't be able to do that. I don't have kids yet. I haven't done it yet, but I'm preparing for that possibility. People shouldn't have to prepare to not be able to talk to their parents about family and love and who they love, you know? And it's those kinds of things, like sticks and stones, you know? Sticks might... The point is that, like, words actually hurt. The dynamics that are created because of the way that people say that they love you, but, like, daggers behind men's smiles kind of thing. But people don't even realize that they're being really exclusive to the gay community, but using words like, I love you anyways, but...
It's conditional.
Yeah, and I don't think that people realize that condition. And it's really sad.
And I think we need to do a lot of work on the flip side as well, where we do a lot of demonizing of religion. And I think one of the hopes of this show was to kind of present the other side and help bridge that gap between people who are gay and have faith. And I think it's an incredible thing to have faith in something, be it in Jesus and God or in whatever religion you are particularly drawn to. And I think that's something that is incredibly empowering. I think it's a source of a sense of community, a source of empowerment for folks. It's a network that you can rely on. And that shouldn't be disparaged. And I think it is unfortunate that maybe the gay community has silenced that. So, you know, the butt of the joke being the Pope, you know, but what does that say to the Catholic in the room? Does that say that maybe I shouldn't mention this part of my life if you think the Pope is hilarious to laugh at, you know, in which case you're closing doors? I think it's an interesting conversation. How did you negotiate that with, like, what was the next step?
It was in my own my own path in life, trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I mean, I came out gay and then I had to come out Christian, you know, like, but coming out Christian to your Christian parents as a gay Christian is two very, very different things. It's, it was empowering to me as much as they don't like it. But to be able to bridge that gap, I find it, like you said, it's empowering for the gay community to stand up. We're not a bunch of rebels. We're not a, like a bunch of deviant rebels that just want to like fight against the church, you know, like there's a huge sense of power and community within gay men, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, within the queer community. And for us to be able to stand up and build that gap and be like, you know what, like even as a non-Christian gay man, to be able to stand up and say, yeah, I'm going to respect that. I'm going to respect my gay brother who might have a religious belief. And it might be sad in the long run that we're the ones that are being ridiculed, and yet we're the ones that in the end are trying to build the gap with our persecutors, you know. And that's, I'm speaking as my own life with my own family. That's how it feels. I'm trying to bridge that gap with my parents and be the better person, be the bigger person, be the person that is able to bridge that gap. And to be a Christian is to be Christ-like, you know? And that's an even more empowering thing when I have to show the way it should be led, the way you should act to the people that did teach me that from such a young age, to be Christ-like. And here I am having to be the one that has to be the better person to show.
To turn the other cheek.
To turn the other cheek with my parents. Now, they don't accept it yet, but who knows?
Well, touch wood. Yeah. I mean, our viewers, our listeners can't tell, but I just touched a bit of wood there. Plywood. Plywood.
I saw him do it.
Yeah. The IB... The last comment is, you know, as you said, it's important to be Christ-like and to be a role model for folks who maybe who don't have the faith yet. And Dylan was saying about how with the evangelical church, it's about kind of gently guiding the flock kind of more together. And I think it's interesting. So how did you navigate the situation at PTS?
I just realized that it was just an oversight. It wasn't anything that was meant to be damaging to anybody. It was just something that we never really paid attention to because of that comfortable gap that I spoke about earlier, that the Christians will stay in their community, the gay people will stay in their own community, and there's jokes on both sides, you know, in comfortable spaces. The safe space of PTY is like being in your own family home. That's what it felt like. And I know that's how it felt like for the kids. So they felt comfortable enough to make these jokes. I caught on to it, you know, and I had to say something, you know. I'm like, there are some other quiet kids that could have religious beliefs, but now don't feel comfortable talking about them.
Yeah. Now, hopefully, by bringing these conversations up and having the conversations that people don't have or don't have often enough, maybe we can help to bridge that gap. So if you are listening and maybe you are a Christian family and you have a son or a daughter or a relative that is gay, have that conversation about having a sense of community and having a network and really bridging the gap. There is so much literature out there on navigating homosexuality and the Christian faith that I'm sure there's plenty of reading material and plenty of conversation starters that you can check out. But I am afraid, thank you so much for the three of you for joining us today, but that we have run out of time. But we have one last Christmas song, and I had so much fun choosing Christmas songs for this. Now, I realize if anyone's done any kind of shopping that they're probably sick to the back teeth of Christmas music, but bear with me because the last one we have is Tegan and Sarah, Canadian option, and this is their rendition of the Chipmunk song, and you're all welcome, and have a good night from us.
Okay, Tegan. Okay, Ted. Okay, Sarah.
Christmas time is near. Time for toys and time for cheer. We've been good, but we can't last. Hurry Christmas, hurry fast. Want a please stand the way. Please, Christmas, don't be late.
That's enough. Let's not overdo it. No, wait a minute, girls. Sarah, cut it out. Ted, just a minute.